This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning on what is turning out to be a very lovely Tuesday, 13th of September. You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. Now, in half an hour, we do have the breakfast grill, as we always do on weekdays. Xiaoning, who is in the hot seat today?
Oh, very interesting. Our friendly neighbors from down south. Because in the hot seat this morning is going to be Keith Tan. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Singapore Tourism Board. Now, as we know, Singapore, tiny, tiny island, just 57 kilometers wide and 27 kilometers long, with a population of 5.9 million people, but they want 6 million tourists to visit this city-state. So how are they going to achieve it? What are the challenges considering the Singapore dollar is at very high, plus average room rates in Singapore at a decade high of 259 Sing dollars?
It's very expensive to go to Singapore, I have to say. I mean, I have been quite a couple of times this past few months. It's wonderful. I mean, it's a lot to do there, but it's really expensive. So I wonder how they're going to attract Malaysian visitors especially.
Well, not just Malaysian, but global visitors. Because you might visit it once, but would you visit it again and again? And how long will you stay in this city-state? So these are the questions I'm going to ask him. So do tune in. That's going to be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin.
But in the meantime, we are turning our attentions over to Europe, where winter is coming. And with it comes political pressure to address skyrocketing costs in the wake of the war in Ukraine. So last Monday, this pressure was ramped up following Russia's move to turn off the Nord Stream 1 pipeline that supplies gas to many EU countries. Moscow said that gas supplies would not be restored through the pipeline until sanctions on Russia have been lifted.
The EU has spent the past 8 months seeking ways to reduce their reliance on Russian oil and gas. On Wednesday, the EU Commission laid out a number of proposals for member states to consider, which following consultations on Friday have been narrowed down to the following focus areas: a reduction in peak electricity demand, windfall levies on non-gas power production, a broader gas price cap, and provision of liquidity to power producers facing increasingly high collateral demands.
However, there are still agreements within the EU on how these measures should be implemented. So can the EU come to a consensus on the package of measures to take before the temperature drops below 4 barons levels?
For a better understanding of what's at stake in the EU negotiations, we speak to Dr. Frederick Kleem, research fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Good morning, Frederick. Thanks for joining us today. Now, how much progress have EU countries made in weaning themselves off supplies of Russian oil and gas since the outbreak of the war in Ukraine?
Hi, good morning. Excellent to be back on your show once again. I hope your listeners are well. Look, listen, this is a serious energy crisis that we're seeing now in Europe, right? This is a perfect storm of inflation, supply chain issues, the pandemic, and now the invasion, right? At the same time, France has taken up a lot of their nuclear power plants off the grid and is receiving electricity from other EU countries. There's a gas and an electricity crisis, right? Let us not forget the electricity crisis when we just talk about the gas. In my view, this is the most serious crisis in EU history, in fact, and it has the greatest potential to actually cause long-term damage to societies and governments. People are really feeling the pinch. Look, a few months ago, we were just all looking at the daily COVID numbers, right? Nowadays, it's the gas price and storage filling levels. So in terms of weaning off, look, it's a lot easier to wean off oil, which can be just bought elsewhere and shipped at higher prices, but it's easy. Right, and natural gas is really difficult. It's pipeline dependent, right? And this gas infrastructure cannot just be built very quickly. But there is an urgency now on the political level, of course, and diversification is here the game in town, right? Away from Russian pipeline gas, I think it accounts for almost half of all the gas consumed in the EU, and this has now actually dropped to 9% already, right? 9% from almost half. So the long-term strategy here really is to invest really heavily in renewables, and this is happening, and perhaps even nuclear to some extent, to become autonomous this way, right? But this takes time. So the short term is gas from Norway, gas from North Africa, from Qatar, from Azerbaijan, and so forth. So that is it. So the diversifying away, this weaning off, is going reasonably well, but it takes time.
So the crisis lurches from COVID to gas now. And I think you talk about diversification being the midterm strategy, but in this short term, in the next 6 months, when we go through winter, which countries in Europe will be impacted the most?
So all of them will be impacted, right? I mean, there's literally no country that is not vulnerable. Again, it's a really serious crisis. Energy users facing hardships, companies that use gas, industry that uses gas already have to stop production to some extent, right? This can lead to real political paralysis in Europe, and every European struggles. But of course, there are some countries more vulnerable than others, right? And we have to obviously zoom in on Germany and some other central and even some Eastern European states as well, right? Especially the winter. I think you mentioned it in your moderation. Right? The winter will be pretty tough, and most households have not even received the new electricity bills yet, right? I mean, they're still paying the old prices for now, and this is going to change very soon. And when the bill comes, I think there is a strong risk that the support for Ukraine and the support for sanctions against Russia will drop significantly. And this, of course, was Vladimir Putin. Putin wants, right, in his cynicism that is innate to him. So you can certainly expect unrest in some countries, right? And EU unity is already pretty shaky on this, to be honest. Right? I think it was last time when I was on your show, we talked about Hungary, right? And this is, they have received a lot of criticism and unfair criticism, in my view. But this is a different question. Bulgaria is negotiating now to receive Russian energy, gas, Russian gas as we speak, right? And others will follow. So important here is that the governments in Europe get their bailout measures going.
Okay, Frederick, I want to expand on something you've talked about, which is the EU unity. At what point does this union of 27 countries break over the war in Ukraine because of this high energy cost? Do you see a kind of a point in time when it might happen?
You were brought off a bit. I think you asked when the unity will break, if there is a point in time when the unity will break. I think we're already seeing it now, to be honest. So the measures that the EU has now proposed last week, and I think they will actually come up with a lot of detail on this tomorrow, on Wednesday, but if the European Union wants to make this more than just a proposal, a recommendation for member states, but actually sign this into law, right, make it a directive, then the member states will have to agree. And this is when the serious negotiations will come in, right? You already saw it last week when the energy ministers couldn't agree on certain details of the proposed package, right, of the measures. So EU unity, I believe it will hold, but it will include compromises, right? I mean, the Commission, the European Commission is not going to get what they want. The Eastern European states are not going to get what they want. Germany's not going to get what they want. So there will be some sort of compromise that needs to be struck in order to hold that unity. But once again, you said it in your moderation, and I just mentioned it as well. The winter is going to be very, very critical. When people really feel the pinch in their pockets, I think this is when a great deal of diplomacy and negotiation will be necessary.
Are you going to see the emergence of far-right, right nationalistic governments? Because you see the polls in Italy, you see the results of Sweden elections, right? Because of this fraying and fracturing of European unity, are you going to see European governments shift more to the right?
Yes, I think this will happen to the right in some countries and to the left in other countries, right? There is always this balance. But this is the nature of democratic politics, right? Whenever there is a crisis, populist parties usually gain some sort of foothold and gain popularity because they promise easy answers, right? They say, oh, look, the war is not our problem. Why should we sanction Russia, for example, right? But there are, of course, broader strategic questions. And most people in Europe are capable of seeing through this reasonably well, I think. And whenever we see this tendency towards the extremes of the spectrum, usually the pendulum will swing back the other way as well. So I'm not really concerned about sort of the worst case scenario of Europe being taken over by right or left-wing populists. There will be some election results for them, but as we have seen before, right, after the refugee so-called crisis, for example, during COVID as well. But all in all, Europe is reasonably measured.
Frederick, thank you very much for speaking with us. That was Dr. Frederick Kleem, Research Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies, talking to us about the dynamics that is taking place as EU faces its arguably worst energy crisis in the wake of the war in Ukraine. The real question is whether that EU unity can hold as the temperature drops.
Yeah, unfortunately, the sound quality of the call wasn't the best, but from what I can gather, compromises will be made between the 27 member states for sure, because some countries feel the pinch pinch more than others, Germany being, I think, the most vulnerable because almost, before the crisis, almost 100% of their energy needs were met via gas that came from Russia. They're going to switch off all their nuclear power plants. I think they've delayed it. Two of the plants will be delayed. And the shift towards renewable energy isn't happening or going to happen fast enough to help Europe.
Yeah, and you see gas storage facilities in Europe already hit nearly 80% level, which is near its peak. So then where else do you store the remaining gas? That's the biggest question going forward. And Frederick, I think, made a very interesting point. They have not yet felt the price rises yet. They have not yet felt it. And that's what I think struck me.
I think it's happening, but it's probably not at its peak.
Peak, yes.
Just like inflation, it's not transitory.
Something that we will be keeping an eye on moving forward. It's 7:46 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we're going to discuss how can we fortify Malaysia's resilience against flooding. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.